My freshman philosophy professor assigned this exercise and called it a bucket list. We were supposed to make a list of all the things we wanted to do in our lives before we
kicked the bucket. Cutesy.
It's pointless now.
We could do this.
You're listening to Simon Scriver's amazingly ultimate fundraising superstar podcast, talking all things fundraising, charities, nonprofits, and more. Here's your host, as always, Simon Scriver.
You've all heard of a bucket list. A bucket list is the goals that you aspire to achieve, the little quirky things that you want to do before you get hit by a bus or thrown into a canyon or whatever way you want to die. We've all heard of those. But a new concept to me is this idea of a career bucket list, or specifically a fundraising bucket list. The things that we want to achieve as professional fundraisers in our career. And this was brought to my attention over on a new blog by the one and only Andy King, who is very kind of to join us today. Hello, Andy.
Hello.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Thanks. Yourself?
Oh, yeah, I'm all right, you know, the usual. And you, Andy, are an impressive individual. I think you'd be the first to admit you haven't been on the fundraising scene a whole lot of time.
No, that's true.
But you've gone ahead and you've won the Institute of Fundraising's Best Fundraising Newcomer Award.
I did.
You're a trustee. You're a professional fundraiser. You're a lot, and you've now started blogging. You're very active on social media. You're a lot of things.
Yeah, I guess so.
And how was it winning the Newcomer Award? Was that a surprise or did you expect it?
Yeah, no, I saw, I didn't even know that I'd been nominated until I got a tweet from the IOF, like tagging me in the post. And I immediately looked at my Twitter that was like loads of anti-Trump stuff and memes and was like, oh God. So that was a surprise in itself. And then on the night, yeah, it was quite a big surprise because the rest of the list was really, really impressive people.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a good night all around.
It's awesome. Complain. Congratulations. And what is your day job?
I am the partnerships manager for East African Playgrounds. Okay. So I look after our university and corporate partnerships, similar to how a lot of charities run Kilimanjaro climbs, etc. Mm-hmm. We run our own in-house gorilla trek, where people trek to see the last remaining silverback gorillas, and then they volunteer on a playground build, so they get to see where the money they've raised has gone. And I head up the team that run that with universities, and I also started corporate partnerships from scratch 2 years ago.
So, yeah. Is it a playground for gorillas?
It's not. It's a common misconception, but unfortunately not, because we don't know if they'd like the swings the way we do. So.
That's fair. And so you're reasonably new to the blogging world, or you've blogged, but in terms of setting up your own blog, you have just set one up at responsibleraising.wordpress.com.
That's correct. Yes.
And the blog that caught my eye was this idea of a fundraising bucket list. How would you describe a fundraising bucket list? Better than me?
Yeah, I'm not sure better than you. It was just a list of, well, it started as my list of things that I wanted to achieve. And then I tried to expand it out as things that I thought any fundraiser might aspire to achieve in their career. So it's a fair mix of fundraising styles. I've been really fortunate to work for a small charity that's allowed variety. But yeah, it's literally just a bucket list for a fundraiser's career with a fair variety of stuff. And there has been some personalizations that have happened because a few people have made it their own, including Callum Coker, who took the idea and started his complete own bucket list, which is pretty cool.
Nice.
But yeah.
I like it because, I mean, I've been at times reasonably driven in my fundraising career, and I've always had those kind of couple of goals in front of me. Like before I started speaking, I wanted to speak. Then I wanted to deliver a plenary. I wanted to start a podcast. I wanted, do all these things. And I suppose I kind of kept them to myself. I maybe, said them to a couple people close to me, but I just loved this idea that you put them out there. So not making yourself vulnerable, but being really open of like, this is what I want to do.
Yeah, for sure. I think for me, there's an element of accountability to it.
Yeah.
I am the kind of person that likes to tell people my goals because it makes them far more likely that I do them.
Clever.
So it was a nice way of showing some things that I'd already done and was proud of having done, and also a lot more things that I was keen to at some point do and know that I would be asked about in time. apparently on air. So
Well, this is added pressure. So what I'd like to do, if you don't mind, is actually work down the list and scold you for the ones you haven't done yet.
Yeah, here we go.
But actually, because some of them you've crossed off. For example, the very first one you had on this was that you wanted to write a blog post.
Yes, correct.
Which is really clever. I mean, they always say with a to-do list, the first one you always should be able to cross off straight away.
It's always my list.
Easy. And you've done that. So what do you think was holding you back from writing that first blog post if you wanted to already do it?
I've written a few blog posts before, but I wanted to write one that was specifically for a blog that I would run. And I think I wanted a concept that I thought would genuinely add value. Mm-hmm. And as you've already said, I'm quite new to fundraising. I didn't want to try and position myself as this maverick expert with only a few years of experience. So what I thought I'd rather do was share my learning journey and kind of provide a structure to that and share some things that I have learned from actual experts. And it was basically the lack of an idea that I thought people would actually want to read and that I felt I was in a position to write for quite a long time.
I like it. And it's a good sign. I mean, it's a great first post. If people are sharing it and people are kind of tweaking it for their own, that's always a good sign. Yeah, I don't think anyone read my first blog post. So you should be very proud.
I was fortunate in that some good friends retweeted it from the off, which added some credibility. But yeah, it was good.
That helps. Number two, we're just going to skirt over, but you said you want to get a favorite fundraising podcast. Obviously, you know, I'm not campaigning here today, but we can come back to that one.
Yeah, sure we can.
Number three, you want to read 3 books on fundraising in a year.
Yeah, again, as a bit of an accountability thing, I've been trying to get more and more into reading resources around fundraising. I think there's a lot of training out there. There's a lot of training that working in a small charity I can't necessarily afford, but there's also a lot of training that's written down and available to the masses, and I know lots of people that own fundraising books, etc. So I'm just trying to coax myself into reading more of them by putting a timeline and a number on them. I read 2 last year, so I'm hoping to read 3 this year.
Yeah, and are you reading one at the moment?
I'm not. I'm reading a fiction book that I promised a friend I would finish by the end of February. Okay. Notably March.
it's not fiction about fundraising. It's
unfortunately not.
We need one of those.
We do.
But if anyone...
The Fundraiser That Wanted More by Rob Woods is fiction. I've read that one.
Okay.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's good. So if anyone has any recommendations that they can send them over to you.
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, I do like fundraising books, and there's some really good ones out there, but I find it's like sometimes I'm reading to get away from fundraising.
For sure. Yeah. I get that.
And that's the hard thing. But 3 books is manageable. You can do that.
Yeah, for sure.
You want to, number 4, you want to attend an unconventional fundraising event. And the one that you've named here that's on the list to do is Pizza for Losers.
Yeah, for sure. I think fundraising is really cool in that there's quite a lot of... I want to say anti-conferences in the, or I think the other phrase is like not working, like networking, but not working.
Okay.
Where the idea is that you can just be yourself and a human version of yourself. And I think the Pizza for Losers idea in particular is really appealing because it's about humans getting to know humans rather than professionals trying to impress each other.
Yeah. So this is Nikki Bell's one for anyone that's not familiar. This is Nikki Bell's series of events she's organizing where people are sharing their failures over pizza.
Yes.
And you're speaking at one of them?
I am indeed. Yeah. The 5th of June in London.
Yeah.
About how easy it is to fail at maintaining relationships with supporters across continents and how you can also be better at that.
So you're not just attending as a loser, you're actually presenting as a loser.
Chief loser, and also highly fighting that pineapple does belong on pizza, and I will fight.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
Oh, my God. Okay. Let's just ignore that.
Okay, fine. Controversial, I know.
What else would you class as an unconventional fundraising event? The other one that comes to mind is fundraising camp that Howard Lake runs, which is kind of unconventional.
So there's fundraising camp by Howard Lake, and there's also Charity Slam,
which
is a fundraising convention where none of the sessions are given by people in charity.
Nice.
So, for example, Lego ran a session last year, and it's about what people can learn from other sectors and apply to themselves in a bigger picture.
Oh, I like that.
There's another event similar to Pizza for Losers called Cock Up Cocktails, which is, again, talking about things that maybe haven't worked. Yeah, there's a few, and there seems to be more cropping up over time as well, which is nice.
Nice. There's one over in Ireland, which I think he's trying to take it international.
That guy called Hack.
Yes, that Kevin, yeah. My friend Kevin Delaney runs. And that's a good one where he gets kind of four or five charities in a room and groups them up with people from different backgrounds, some fundraising, some not fundraising. And they have whatever, 8 hours or 12 hours to create a campaign. And that's pretty cool. That's a good one.
That's really cool.
Okay, number six, you're talking about speaking at a fundraising conference, which you've already done.
I have, yes. Yep, that's an error. That should be crossed out. Good.
And why did you want to? I'm especially curious about this because obviously speaking is a big part of my life now, and I used to be petrified of speaking. Why did you want to do this?
Yeah, sure. I'm not that scared of public speaking generally. Mm-hmm. I quite enjoy it. I think I've got a huge merit out of listening to other people speak in the past and wanted to get myself to a stage where I was comfortable passing that on, mm-hmm. which I did at the Foundation for Social Improvement's Northern Conference, which is a conference specifically for small charities. And then that session went quite well, and I'm giving it again at a fundraising convention, which is equally terrifying and exciting.
And that was the first time you'd ever presented on fundraising?
So I've run information meetings for the Gorilla Trek Challenge I talked about earlier. Sure. But it was the first time I'd spoken to a bunch of fundraising professionals about fundraising. Yeah, for sure.
That's scary. The thing that used to scare me most about it when I started was the idea of questions. So people asking questions that would just make you look stupid that you didn't know.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, my first experience, I was totally taken aback by because for some reason, I thought it was multiple sessions. And so I'd have about 30 people in mine.
Yeah.
But it wasn't five sessions at a time. It was five sessions over the day.
Okay.
So there was 150 fundraisers of all different backgrounds, all different charity sizes, causes in this full church. All eyes on me, and they asked me whether I wanted a headset mic or a lectern mic.
Yeah.
And I was torn between like being a university professor and like Britney Spears / Steve Jobs.
You wanted so Britney, obviously
it's Britney bitch. So yeah. Went for that. But because I had that and because I was talking on something I did know I knew quite well,
yeah.
It kind of feels like I've prepared myself for the worst, I guess. I don't know what the worst would be, but
I don't know what the worst could be. My first was only to 20 people and there was no microphone or anything, and I was still shitting it. Like, it was still like a pretty, and even now I kind of find smaller rooms harder sometimes. It just
Totally get that, because you're more aware of what other people might be thinking or doing.
Yeah.
Like, when there's a big room, you're not really focused on anyone's reaction or whatever, but I can totally see that.
Well, good on you. And then you're presenting that same session at fundraising conventions?
So I'm presenting an improved version in collaboration with Vicky Wallace, who is a peer of mine from Hope for Children. Absolutely incredible fundraiser. So we've kind of come together, torn that session apart and put new meat on the skeleton, which I'm quite excited for.
Good on you.
And then I'm also doing two panel conversations at fundraising convention, which is weird because I've gone from volunteering last year to speaking every day this year.
That's excellent.
But it's pretty cool. And those panels are on personal development and on the next generation of philanthropists.
So tell me this, because people listening to this, I mean, what we're encouraging them to do is try and kind of achieve their next step.
Yeah.
The panels, that's not something you applied for, is it? Were you invited to do that?
So one of them I sort of applied. I knew both people putting together the panels.
Okay.
One of them, they just asked me. The other was the Tony Ellisher Foundation, and they asked their cohort who wanted to be on it.
Nice.
And I put my hand up. But I think it's worth saying with fundraising conventions that they all have application processes, and that wasn't necessarily something that I was aware of. I think I always assumed that people were just approached and the same people were always going to be approached, because when you're Rob Woods and everyone knows that you speak at every convention, you're going to approach Rob Woods because he'll speak and he'll give a great talk. Yeah. But actually, you can just apply yourself, and if you have a good idea, it goes through. So
yeah,
it's definitely worth knowing.
And what's really interesting is your three sessions. You've got one where you applied for it, one where you've just been invited because you know someone, and one where you. How did the third one come about? I kind of remember.
It was like a closed application so, in a way.
So, but you put your hand up for it. So all of them are you putting yourself out there,
More or less, yeah.
But in slightly different ways, and that's usually how these good things come about.
Definitely,
that's awesome. Congratulations. Number seven on your list, you've crossed out. Visit three charities, projects, or three charity services. So you have visited three.
Yes. Yeah. So when I was at uni, I went to Mighton Hospice's hospice centre to look at it because we were looking at them as one of our charity partners of a fundraising society. And that was just a really awesome trip to really understand what that kind of end of life care looked like. It was really, really great. And then I visited East African Playgrounds projects in Uganda and Raising Futures Kenya's projects in Kenya in various roles.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Nice one. Good on you. Number eight, you want to join three meaningful fundraising communities?
Yeah. So I guess I mean like Facebook groups or LinkedIn groups or whatever. And I'm aware that there are quite a few out there that I'm either not in or don't pay enough attention to, like the IOF. Like the IOF, like special interest groups exist. And I'm aware they exist, but I always, well, I just haven't really got round to mining them for their worth. But the Small International Development Charities Network is a wicked Facebook group specifically for, you guessed it, small international development charities. But the openness and resource sharing and the specialties that people share on that is absolutely huge. There's a massive Google Drive full of resources from fundraising strategies to comms policies to child safeguarding policies. And then Fundraising Chat is really, really great. And completely varied. Sometimes people ask for life-size sheep. Other times people are sharing job posts. Yeah, it's good.
It's great. I used to be pretty active in Fundraising Chat before I quit Facebook. But it's great. There's thousands of people, and they're all fundraisers from around the world. And it's kind of like, you know, you never have to make a mistake that someone's already made, or you never have to want for a document. You know, like you said about the other group, that if you're looking for a child safety policy, or if you're looking for a volunteer form, or you're looking for anything, someone just sends it across to you for free.
Absolutely.
It's amazing.
And it's similar to Pizza for Losers, I think, in a way that you can just post being like, I'm about to make this mistake. Can someone stop me, please?
Yeah.
So yeah, those are the two that I'm in and regularly participate in, but there's not really a third community. So if anyone knows of another Facebook or LinkedIn group that's particularly active, it'd be really great to hear about it.
You're just like getting people to campaign for you. It's like an X factor of fundraising groups.
More or less, yeah. Why not?
Number nine, you want to spend some time with fundraisers from a different country. And you said, does Scotland count? Because you've got Gemma and Danny. And I suppose with Brexit, you know, maybe might be losing Scotland. So.
Yeah, maybe. So it's possible. I don't know. I think different fundraising communities are really, really interesting and they have different cultures. And I think there's a lot to learn from it. Obviously, Scotland has some differences, right? But not necessarily the same.
And I mean, I'm Irish, so, you know, we're about 10 years behind you, so you can add that me on that. And you can, I mean, it's great to go to international conferences, which I think you have on your list as well.
I do, I'm really keen to see just differences. In particular, I find it interesting because so you've just described Ireland as behind, and Canada has also been described as behind. And I'm by Canadians. It's okay. I can say that. Yeah. I actually have Canadian friends. Totally fine.
Some of my best friends are Canadian.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry about it. And I'm going to stop. I find it interesting. Like, what do you mean by behind?
I don't know. I mean, sometimes I think of, you know, it's obviously a different market. Community's a bit different for us. Church giving is really big for Irish, a lot of Irish fundraisers. So there's elements that are different, but then there's other things like when you look at digital and when you look at, you know, certain event and technology, especially. I always find like England is almost a bit of a crystal ball that you can look at what charities are doing in England and you know, eventually it's going to come across to Ireland. But they get started in England because you have that mass of people. You have like a tipping point where it makes more sense to go in that market, and then eventually, because we're so close to you, it kind of starts to filter across to us. So I mean, I think we learn a lot from English fundraising conferences and English fundraising groups. But I mean, I would say there's stuff we're in line with and maybe stuff we do better. Mm. But I suppose that's the benefit of looking at different markets is we learn from all of them. And I've learned a lot from Canadians. I've learned a lot from English and Americans. And one of my favorite conferences is IFC, where you get like such a melting pot of international speakers. I remember one year being at IFC, and I walked past the room, and someone was running a session on mobile giving in Africa. And it's just like, oh, wow, that's like, you know, something I've never even really kind of thought about because it's not relevant to me. But this is cool.
This
is going on right now. And there's an expert in that room teaching other people who need to improve that. And that's why I love these international things.
Yeah, for sure. That's really, cool. really cool.
Hey, let me just take a little break from this amazing podcast to tell you about a wee little event that is happening over in Toronto, Canada, run by a couple of good friends of mine, John Lepp and Jen Love. They are hosting Donor Love and Donuts. This is a great event. Now, they might be old, they might be Canadian, they might be all sorts of things, but this event is going to be super fantastic for many reasons. For a start, they're both great speakers. I love them both. I see them speak whenever I can, not just because they're friends, but because they're entertaining, wonderful, emotional, fantastic speakers. They share a lot of great knowledge, and they're going to be sharing a lot of great knowledge at this event. They're going to be talking about all things donor love, how you sprinkle donor love along your annual program, your legacy program, through your case for support, all your fundraising. They teach you how to bring donor love into everything you do so that you can raise more. They're running this half-day event in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And one of the cool things about this is it is a pay-what-you-like event. You know I'm loving these pay-what-you-like events these days. So if you think it's worth $50, if you think it's worth $300, which I'm sure it is because these guys are superstars, then you can pay that. But if you're really stingy or you have no money or your boss is giving you shit and won't let you spend any more budget this year, then you can pay nothing. You can go for free. You can bring along your boss and show them why they're being such a dick and why they should put some money into this. And whatever it is, whatever you decide to pay, you're going to go. You're going to get loads of donuts free. You're going to get coffee free. You're going to get tea free. And you're going to get a whole bunch of knowledge from these two wonderful, lovely experts. Go to this. This will be great if you're in the Toronto neighborhood or anywhere within the region of it. If you're in I can't think of any other places in Canada like Vancouver, and that's not close at all. But other places in Canada, just make the journey. It will be amazing. If I was anywhere near them, I would be going to this. This is going to be a great event. Search for Donor Love and Donuts on Facebook. Search for it on Eventbrite to get your tickets, or just check out the Agents of Good website and they will have all the details there. Go to this. Right, back to our podcast, my friends. So you said you want to start a cause-related story notebook, which seems to be a Rob Woods invention or a Rob Woods concept. What is this? Because this means nothing to me.
Oh, he did a session at a convention last year that I saw about how you should have a notebook on your desk or wherever you go as a fundraiser. And when you hear a beneficiary story or a service statistic or something that sticks out to you, you just write it down.
Okay.
And just having a notebook specifically for that. So you always have dozens of stories literally at your fingertips that you can flip through.
That
you can read before a donor meeting or on a hard day. And you can just have some things about your cause always with you. And I think that was really genuinely a great moment for me and something I wanted to share, because I think East African playgrounds are getting a lot better at capturing stories and telling stories. But historically, they've been a lot more statistic-based. Mm-hmm. And a complaint of mine as a fundraiser was that I didn't have that many stories. But I realized that actually a lot of the times they were just said briefly over a Skype call and not recorded. Mm. And so by starting to write them down, that archive is really built. And it's something that I think all fundraisers could benefit from is just capturing the side comments that get made and fleshing those out into stories where they can.
Nice. So you have a paper notebook now that you're writing this into?
Yeah,
what is it? What's the design? What does it say on the cover?
Oh, it's like a really basic Pukka notepad. It was okay. The one that I got when I got back from the office. It's not, unfortunately, not as inspiring as you'd it to be.
Not one of these cool ones. Okay. Number 11, you want to do a ridiculous charity challenge, which you've done.
I have indeed. I've done a few.
Tell me that you've said here you've cycled from London to Paris and you drank nothing but water for a month.
Yeah. The water for a month was terrible for 3 days. And then okay for like 2 weeks. Then in the last week, I was like, I'm so healthy. I'm the healthiest I've ever been. I'm never going to drink another liquid again. Yeah. Hit the first of February, and I obviously immediately had a Tango Ice Blast because it was the most flavorful drink I could think of and didn't look back. And then I also, cycled from London to Paris for Practical Action, who are a wicked international charity. And I was once told a few years ago that some people hadn't believed that I'd cycle from London to Paris because I don't talk about it enough. And I'm the kind of person that would brag more if I'd done it.
That's harsh.
So just saying, for the record, I've cycled from London to Paris. I'll say it a few more times and then people will start to believe it. Yeah, it helps.
That's harsh. That's harsh. Number 12, you haven't done yet. Face a fear through fundraising. What do you mean by that?
So this one is coming. I'm doing an ab sale for Raising Futures Kenya. And I'm terrified of heights.
Yeah.
And I thought it would be a good fundraising angle, personally, as someone doing a community fundraiser, to let my friends pay to watch me brick it, basically.
Nice.
So yeah, that's March 16th.
Next week.
That is next weekend. Thank you for noticing.
Oh my gosh.
And I keep watching videos of people abseil down the Owen building in Sheffield, getting about halfway and being like,
"Oh my God, are you shitting yourself?"
I am a little bit, yeah.
Do you ever watch those videos? Like, I wouldn't say I have a fear of heights. No, I don't have a fear of heights. But when I watch those, like, almost like parkour videos where they climb really tall towers and do, like, pull-ups off the edge and stuff like that.
Nope.
Oh my God.
I'll link
to a few in the podcast description. Convince someone else to do a charity challenge, which is surely a big part of your job.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
You've done that.
I have done that more than a handful of times. You'll be glad to hear.
And which is, I suppose, part of why you're an award winning fundraiser, because you've already done it.
Guess so.
Become a regular donor to three causes. You currently give money to Cruise Bereavement Care and Raising Futures Kenya.
Yeah, I was really worried when I put that on my list that loads of charities would be like, a regular giver.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's pitch to him. But luckily, that hasn't happened yet. Yeah. He says planting the seed of an idea in several people's heads, I'm sure.
So you need a third.
I am open to a third when it comes organically, is what I'm going to say.
That's fine.
So I give to Cruise Bereavement Care, who are a bereavement counselling charity that really helped me out when my dad died. Mm-hmm. And I give to the charity that I'm a trustee of, because obviously I think they're sick.
Nice.
But that's it so far.
Okay, and I love your next one, is to become a lapsed donor.
I'm
optimistic of you there, Andy.
I've technically done this by mistake, so I don't know if it counts or not. It was very recently, my credit card expired. Mm. To be fair, I put it on the list because I kind of wanted to see, from the perspective of a donor, the journey of what happens when you stop. Mm-hmm. But my credit card expired for my regular donation to Raising Futures. And again, I'm a trustee of them. So the CEO was very quick to pick up the phone.
Yeah,
like,
really?
It's interesting. So your card's not working? I just wonder why. Okay, Vic, I'll get the new card. Don't worry.
Because, I mean, I've seen it. I've done a lot of mystery shopping, and sometimes you lapse and you never hear from them. You know,
absolutely.
It just goes completely unnoticed.
Yeah, and I think that's what the three donations and the lapse donation was leading to. Like, I've never done any mystery shopping kind of activity, and I'm really keen to.
Yeah.
So, that's nice.
Number 16, you want to write a will and feature a charity in it. You don't have a will yet?
I'm 24. I do not. I mean, I can leave, like, half a packet of polos to my housemate. My Nintendo
Switch. Can I have your Dr. Pepper?
You can have my Dr. Pepper.
Thanks.
If there's any left at the time.
Yeah.
And I can leave the £3.20 in my bank account to Cruise Bereavement Care to console those that are clearly devastated by the loss. No, I don't have a will yet. But when I do, and I want to have a will as like a life goal, I want to have enough stuff to make it worth leaving.
Yeah, that makes sense.
that some of it goes to charity. Yeah.
I had to write a will. The first time I wrote a will was when I bought a house with my ex-girlfriend and we had a son, and I was like, I'd like to put a charity in it. I'd like to leave a little bit to charity. Mm. And she told me to fuck off. And she was like, no fucking way. She's like, you have to leave it to your son. And
great,
you know, it's like, and
I can see that. I can see why that relationship didn't work out.
But it was so interesting, and I get it, because it's kind of like, even now, there isn't a charity in my will, because I'm like, yeah, well, maybe I should, you know, just leave it all to my son. Why would I not? Because again, I don't have a whole lot of stuff to leave. So how can I start dishing it out? But it was just a really interesting attitude, because she's not a fundraiser. Perception was like, don't fucking leave it to a charity. You know, leave it to people here, and they can decide to give if they want to give.
Sure, for sure.
But yeah, that was funny. You want to write a full funding bid, which is a very exciting thing to put on your bucket list.
Yeah, it's also very ambitious. I've done very little Trust and Foundations fundraising.
Yeah.
Other than like read over a few bids for our Trust and Foundations officer, mm-hmm. I wouldn't confidently say it. No, I'd confidently say it if I phrase it like this. It's the only mainstream form of fundraising I've not really done anything towards.
Mainstream?
In that like major, like in terms of has a track at IOF FC.
Oh yeah?
Kind nice. Of thing. Oh, actually, I haven't done Legacy either.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's something that I'm aware of that I haven't done, and it's something I'd really like to try to do from start to finish, because I think it would teach me a lot about a style of fundraising I don't know that much about.
I like that. I like the awareness of the bits you haven't done and you want to bring them in. I like that. Number 18, you want to make a high-level ask, which you've done a few times.
I have indeed, yeah. Again, I think I wanted to make it as broad and as varied as it could, so I wanted to include lots of different types of fundraising. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'm fortunate enough that I've been able to do that a few times, and a few times they said yes.
Those different types of fundraising come into 19 and 20. You've said you want to approach a corporate for a partnership, and you want to do some face-to-face fundraising. So you're trying to kind of get around the different forms of fundraising, be an all-rounder.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's important for someone who wants to be in fundraising for a long time and is quite ambitious to, if you're going to be leading a team that are doing some work, that you've done some of that work so you can kind of relate to their struggles a bit.
That's fair. And I mean, because all fundraising kind of overlaps, doesn't it? So it helps to have your toe in a bit of it. Number 21, you want to have a coffee with a supporter. You haven't done that? Do you not drink coffee?
So I do drink coffee, possibly too much. I have now done that since publishing the list. But I was doing a lot of one-to-ones with community fundraisers rather than so people that were raising funds rather than donating them themselves.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the times that I was meeting with corporates or I was meeting with higher level donors, it was a very functional meeting, so maybe coffee was involved, but it never felt like a stewardship coffee, which I guess hasn't been phrased so well there. But I don't necessarily think have a stewardship coffee. I think everyone would just look at me and roll their eyes.
Well, you as well. You didn't think someone would be going down this list word by word.
Yeah, that's true.
Confronting
that,
you.
That is very true. But I've subsequently done that because we've recently had someone at East African Playgrounds who has started giving and also started introducing us to her network. And so I have started relatively regularly catching up with her just to see who else she might have to introduce us to or ideas that she's thought of. And it's been a really fruitful relationship. So yeah, I've now ticked that one off. I just haven't updated it yet.
I like it. Number 22, you want to be a beneficiary.
Yeah.
And you mentioned when your father passed away, Crew's Bereavement Care helped you.
Yeah. And I've also been a mentee of the Tony Ellisher Foundation.
Yeah, we had Susan from Tony Ellisher Foundation on the podcast before. I say we, I mean me.
We.
Yeah, Tony Ellisher Foundation. So you're a mentee?
I am.
Tony Ellisher Foundation? And so would you tell us who your mentor is?
It was Lisa Russell from Think Consultancy Solutions.
Okay.
Absolutely wicked woman.
Yeah.
Like absolute fountain of knowledge. It was an incredibly beneficial relationship. Yeah.
You got a lot out of that, the Tony Ellisher Foundation?
Yeah, a lot. And I think that's one of the main things that I bang on about when people meet me, is that if they're a younger aspiring fundraiser, to apply for the Tony Ellisher Foundation is one of my first bits of advice. And I actually just found out that one of my good friends got on the scheme today. So that's really exciting for
him. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. I love them. I love what they're doing. You want to have a nuanced opinion on CRMs and a nuanced opinion on face-to-face fundraising.
Yeah, I just feel like they're the kind of things that fundraisers talk about in the bar a lot. I remember when they're like, yeah.
Yeah.
I will admit that I'm not the first to fall in love with the CRM system, but also I've only ever used one. Mm-hmm. So when I'm shaking my hand at my CRM system, I'm not going to name it because I don't particularly love it. I don't know if it's the concept of a CRM system that I'm shaking my hand at or that particular one. So I'd like to try a few more and work out if I just am lazy or if there's... there's good and bad software out there.
No, I think it's safe to say you can hate all CRM systems. And yeah, they all do a little bit, sure. But yeah, you're always going to hate them in a little bit of a way.
Yeah, sure.
And then, like face-to-face fundraising, that has some good points as well, but there's always going to be bits about it we hate.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know, I have a lot of opinions about face-to-face fundraising that I've never really made coherent. Mm-hmm. And I think eventually that one will go on to be a blog post because I wanted I wanted the list to be like something I could continue to talk about, kind of like an overarching theme of the blog. And I think that's something that I want to consciously think about and talk to both face-to-face fundraisers and non-face-to-face fundraisers about, and develop my thoughts, because I definitely think there is a bit of a divide there and some prejudice there, and I'd like to understand it better and have my own thoughts. So yeah,
nice, I like it. Number 25, you want to take part in a network mapping exercise for a charity to see who I can introduce them to beyond my fundraising network.
Yeah. So network mapping is obviously when you work out who you know and who the people that you know. It's a really common community fundraising tool for getting people to a fundraising target, to be like, rather than asking your mum for a small donation, why don't you ask your mum to do a non-school uniform day at the school that she works at? And it's kind of a tool of spreading influence. And it's one of the things that I advocate quite a lot, is about not just looking at supporters or donors or fundraisers as the instant cash value they can give you, but the other things they can add, the passion they can offer, the time they can give you, the people they can introduce you to. And I wanted to be able to do that from both sides, because I run that quite a lot myself in my job, and I'd quite like to have been on the other side of that, which I did to source a couple of volunteers for a few different organizations.
Nice. So it was successful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Number 26, you want to become the best storyteller I can be, which is, I think you've set yourself up for a tough one here, because you can always be better, can't you, until the day you die.
Yeah, yeah. Eventually, I think one day I'll just decide that I've done it.
Yeah. So how do you become a better storyteller?
I think by practicing, being conscious of your craft, reading more, doing more mystery shopping, being more critically aware of your own voice compared to others. And I think that's one of the things that really interests me about different countries' fundraising markets, and is also one of the reasons that I wanted to be a beneficiary, so that I could see how it feels to be spoken about in fundraising comms.
Oh, wow.
And I think it's just something that you have to work towards. And one day I'll retire and be like, yep, I'm going to be the best I'm going to get. So there you go.
Mic drop.
Yeah, exactly.
In terms of, as a beneficiary for the Cruise Bereavement Charity, did you tell your story, you know, back to them? Have you engaged with them on that level as a beneficiary?
Not massively, but mostly because they haven't asked. If they did, I would. I'm a beneficiary that's also a donor and a fundraiser for them. I've done some events for them.
Wow.
So I do follow quite closely what they say. It's not, I've never had like me as a case study shown, but I still relate to the people that they're speaking about as their beneficiaries.
Wow.
And it's something that I'm always quite conscious of, and try and map that over to how I would feel if I was one of the people getting school training in Kenya, for example.
Yeah. I wonder what it says about you on their database.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
We'll see. We'll leave it up to them.
Maybe they'll let me know after this. Who knows?
And 27, you wanted to become a trustee, and you did. You're a trustee for Raising Futures Kenya.
I am indeed. I think I think in fundraising worlds, you often see people railing against their trustees, or I was in particular putting quite a lot of proposals towards my trustee board. That was how I changed from challenges officer to partnerships manager. And I've always had quite a positive experience, but I was very aware that I didn't really understand their incentive structures, what might appeal to them, why they might do it, and how maybe to level with them and leverage them the best I could. And the best way to do that was to be one myself.
Nice. Good on you. And you've been on the board for nearly a year now.
Yeah, nearly a year. And I have loved it. Yeah. It's been a bit of a baptism by fire. As I think most small charity trustee positions are, but it's also been a huge learning curve. Like, I don't think I'm even close to the fundraiser I was a year ago, and definitely not 2 years ago. And hugely that's down to the Tony Ellisher Foundation and the trusteeship together that have made me just much more aware and considerate of the wider world around me, I think.
Yeah, I think it's really important for fundraisers to dabble as a trustee or be a trustee, because when you're, you know, we do complain about trustees a lot, and I love complaining about trustees, but I've also been one, and I, you know, you kind of know how stretched it can be, how difficult it could be, how fundraising isn't necessarily the number one priority for a trustee. And it just, I think it changes your tone when you're speaking to them, or it changes your approach anyway, because you start to realize that there's a lot more going on that maybe you hadn't necessarily thought about.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's really struck true to me with Raising Futures as well, because I went in to focus on fundraising because that was where I came from, and have immediately got more involved in overall governance, and in particular our relationship with the Kenyan organization, because that's where the work is. Like, that's what needs to be worked out right now.
Sure.
And it's fascinating, and it's taught me a lot, but it's also made me realize that just because something is a priority for me and maybe my colleagues doesn't make it a priority overall for the organization necessarily. Yeah. And there are ways of phrasing things and making decisions the easiest they can possibly be.
Yeah, nice. Good on you. Number 28, we're approaching the end. Number 28, yeah, you want to mentor a younger fundraiser.
Yeah, which combines with 29, I guess, of being mentored. As I said, I got a huge, huge amount out of that, and I would like to reach a position where I feel I can pass that on. I've done some coaching for entry-level fundraisers in terms of a lot of the students that go on to do the Gorilla Trek. I have convinced by hook or crook that maybe fundraising is a career they should consider, and help them get their first roles. But I don't necessarily think that counts in the same way. But I would like to think in 5 to 10 years, when I'm in a more senior position, that I will pay that back. Like, an end goal would be, I guess, being a mentor for the Tony Ellisher Foundation, but yeah, that's a long way off yet, I think.
Yeah, but I mean, there's always, you have a great track record behind you. I know it's only a few years officially in fundraising, but there's people who are just coming into the profession right now who you're certainly in a position to mentor and tick that off the list now. Like, you've done some great stuff.
I guess so. If anyone wants reach out, I guess.
It's funny because I think most people, unless you're a complete narcissist, people don't like to think of themselves as mentors, because I think a lot of people never think they're ready for it.
Sure.
But there's always people who are, you know, maybe a few steps behind you in any profession.
Yeah, and I think that was a big part of putting it on the list and making it public, hoping that someone would see it and ask. Because if they feel like there's benefit to be given from me, then I'm more than happy to try.
Yeah, that's lovely. Yeah, because it says a lot about someone if they're just like, hey guys, I'm a mentor now, come and learn from me.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And then you've been mentored, as you said, and then your final one on the bucket list is to meet your charity idol. Who's this?
It's Mandy Johnson. We have met briefly once at the fundraising awards last July. I was conscious, but not necessarily in the place to have a deep, meaningful chat right then.
Yeah.
I was having a good night, shall we say. She is someone that I consistently, whenever she publishes anything about fundraising or about governance or about staff structures, I just always, it always really speaks to me. In particular, one of her pieces about, I think it's called 20 million raised and only one mental breakdown.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that I'm really conscious of in fundraising, and in myself in particular, is this endless drive that we could and should do better. Mm-hmm. And that we often identify ourselves as working for causes rather than for organizations, and how that can be problematic. Mm-hmm. And she is one of the people that I've seen advocate against that most frequently and most eloquently, and it really speaks to me. She's also a small charities guru/expert, mm-hmm. Which I like also. So yeah,
nice. I love that. Well, that seems a very achievable one. She's a very open and welcoming person, I'm sure.
She is indeed.
I'm sure your paths will cross very soon. I love the idea of having a charity idol. I think Stephen Pidgeon was my charity idol. Mm-hmm. I mean, he still is a little bit, and now I know him quite well. And I do love that idea of like that there's almost rock stars in the fundraising world, sure, that you can look up to. It's hilarious.
Yeah, for sure.
Unfortunately, we're at the end of the list. That's your 30 items on your fundraising bucket list. So I'm sorry, that might have been a bit of a painful exercise for you to go down and be pulled up on it. Is there any big changes you'd make for that, or anything that you think is glaringly missing now?
No, I don't necessarily think so. I think that I did try and make it something that other people might want to do. So mm-hmm. maybe there are some goals that aren't on there that I have, but they're also things that are slightly more personal, mm-hmm. like personal career aspirations of like where I want to be in X amount of time. But that's not necessarily something that I would feel comfortable sharing publicly.
Sure.
Especially because you don't want to tell an employer that you want to leave in X number of years or whatever, right? Just kidding, I'm staying forever.
Yeah.
I'm pretty happy with it. Yeah. I wrote it on a 14-hour bus ride to Kenya, so I had plenty of time to mull it over. Yeah. The fact that other people have engaged with it, and the fact that other people have engaged with it and ticked off significantly more than me as well, gives me hope. I think Darren Pike is the person I've seen with the most, and he was on 19 or 20.
Oh, wow.
So he's doing pretty well.
So it's become like an Andy King challenge now to see how many you can take.
I mean, not quite, but it's a good little, bar opener, if nothing else.
No, I like it. It's a great recommendation to people, because like I said at the beginning, I think everyone has those little goals that they'd love to do, the people they'd like to meet, the things they want to do, like I said about my speaking when I wanted to start that. And I think by putting it out there, fundraisers are so generous in terms of helping each other achieve their goals, that I think only good things can come by putting it out there. And so I love that you've kind of led the way in making it so well put together.
Thanks.
Andy, if anyone wants to, I suppose, help you in your fundraising goals, or if they want to kind of start putting their own fundraising bucket list together, or they just want to hear more about what you have to say, where's the best place for them to find you?
Sure. Yeah. So there's two key places. Twitter is Andy King Raising, which has recently changed. So I'm trying to get people to know that that's a thing. The contact section of the blog, which is responsibleraising.wordpress.com. Nice. Have a contact form that goes straight to my email.
Cool. And I will link to your Twitter and your website in the podcast description. So everyone do go ahead and visit that. Andy's great on Twitter, and I'm loving where this blog is going. Still early days, but everything so far has been great. So good on you.
Thanks, man.
And thanks a million for coming on the podcast. It's great. We'll have to, I'll have to get you on again to talk about something less about you, I suppose.
Compensational, more wide-reaching.
do you happen to have any nuanced opinions on CRM systems?
It seems like you're the kind of person that might now.
As soon as I see that cross off, I'm going to invite you on for your nuanced opinions.
Cool. Can't wait. Cool.
All right, Andy. Listen, thanks a million. I won't keep you any longer. Really good to talk to you, and we'll talk to you again, I hope.
Yeah, sweet. Cheers, Simon.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Simon Scriver's Amazingly Ultimate Fundraising Superstar Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and head over to changefundraising.com to learn more or get in touch with Simon. Or don't. Whatever. You're big enough to make your own decisions.
Hello. This is Morgan Freeman. For discounts on Simon's best-selling online fundraising courses, go to www.changefundraising.com/training and use coupon code podcast. Complete them in your own time, wherever you want. Get busy living or get busy buying.